Although I think most of the time it's because they don't actually know it themselves, or they haven't gone through like the mental process to define what it is they're looking for. So, you know, oftentimes it's like they're approaching the recruitment process as itself the education for themselves, you know. So I'll interview a bunch of people and I'll figure it out, which, you know, it may not actually be a bad method, but they have to be explicit that that's the way they're going to do it. So you can just like throw a few people in there, so to speak, rather than spend huge amounts of time, you know, being accurate with your search. So in other words, I think it's permissible for a hiring manager to have a unclear idea as to what they want. But the way to treat that is to say, right, we're just going to go meet a bunch of people and then we'll work it out after you've met these people and redefine. Rather than work super hard without interacting with the hiring manager and then try and guess what he or she's looking for. As opposed to when a hiring manager is clear and very defined, then you can work without the hiring manager getting involved. So it's a trade-off. If you don't know and you want to explore, great, but you're getting involved early. Jeremy, you're looking at resumes, you're looking at CVs, you're in this search. This is how you should be doing it. Anyway, we're live, everybody. So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 161, bringing it to you every Friday, no fail. We've got another super popular show today. So this is what I've been thinking of for a long time, which is this kind of ongoing debate about how to recruit, how significant is your employer brand when it comes to being effective as a recruiter. Because don't you know, a lot of the case studies that you see online about, hey, this is how we recruited, or this is the perfect way to organize your team, they're all from these amazing companies that everyone knows about. And then you think, yeah, sure, of course, this is how Facebook does it, or this is how Amazon does it. Of course, we're not that. We're a 50-person business that nobody knows. How on earth is that going to work for us? So today's topic is, how does it work when you're hiring for a brand no one knows? And what techniques work? Which techniques are universal? And which ones do we need to be specific on? Because I think most of the time we're going to be working for businesses that no one knows. I mean, there's only a small percentage of people work for these huge brands. Let's do a quick sound check, everybody. We always do this at the start of the show. So people on Crowdcast, if you can hear me okay, please let me know whether you can hear the audio and see the video. Alan and I had some audio issues ourselves earlier, so it's important we get this right. Say you can hear me okay on the Crowdcast, please. We are live everywhere. We should be live on LinkedIn, Facebook, and on Twitter. So if you're on any of those places, let me know whether you can hear me. Just give me a quick comment on the comment thread there, or whatever emoji is available. You know, LinkedIn, by the way, have changed their analytics now. Have you seen this, Ella? Where you no longer get post views, you get impressions, which is probably a little bit more honest. But they've taken away a lot of the other bits of analytics that I thought was quite useful. But they've added a few others, like, you know, the amount of smileys you have or the amount of dislikes you have and stuff like this. I thought that was quite interesting, even though I'm going to ignore all that because you shouldn't pay attention to any analytics when you're doing content. It's a bad idea. Just say what you got to say. Just go ahead and do it. Analytics is not the way forward. It's totally overrated, folks. Also, it's unethical. It is unethical because you should not be adapting your behavior to audience. You will end up being captured by the audience. And before you know it, you become a caricature to what the audience wants. No, the audience isn't going to get me changing. I'm just going to give you what I think, and you're just going to have to deal with it, like or don't like. Okay. So I think that is the only ethical position to take. Anyway, quick one to our sponsors. Thank you to Talenteer. We can't do this show without our sponsors, folks. So please check out Talenteer. They are a cool RPO coming out of the Nordics. They style themselves as the company that's going to take care of your recruiting and scaling challenges if you are in the Northern European area. I think they're also in Germany, coming into the UK as well. It's a super competitive market, but I really like their model. It's very clear. You can get them as a sourcing service. You can get them as an in-house service. You can get them as an RPO. It's really kind of a modular way to approach it. So if you're a company that kind of doesn't know right now what you need, but you need something, check out Talenteer. I'm going to share their link in the chat stream now. Make sure you see it. Oh, thank you, Lagita. She's already done that for us. Okay, let's get on with this. So, Ala, welcome back to the show. Great to have you back. This is the second week in a row, isn't it, for you as the co-host?
Yeah, kind of getting used to it.
Yeah, well, don't let Adam hear that. He gets super jealous, you know. He'll come back
earlier then.
Yeah, he's like Oliver Twist, you know. He's like the guy outside the window looking in and trying to get in. I know he's desperate to get involved in the show again. He like suspends everything to do it. So, but yeah, he had to be upgraded for this one because I wanted to talk about sort of this particular topic, and I thought you had some really good ideas for it. So anyway, let's review the newsletter. Did you read it last week? And if so, what was interesting, Ala?
Yes, for sure. Happy to be here, and today's topic is very, very interesting because I'm happy to share some practical tips because I did work for companies that has no brands and for those who has a super brand. In regards to the news, so this is the one that I probably went thoroughly through. It is the thing that I really read every year. It is the Google Floor Developer Survey. And all the time you will find something interesting. Of course, it's good that they give the idea of who participates. And then you understand like, okay, so the data is still like 60% is coming from United States. It could be more relevant there, but there are more and more European candidates, like the developers participating. So interesting to see what is the technologies the developers love. And it's something that you can always discuss with them. Hey, by the way, I read the article that, yeah, you guys love this language. Or Ruby is actually 50-50. So people like 50% like it, 50 don't. So, and it looks like startups usually pick up Ruby as a language. Quite often they pick up this language as a main language. So a lot of interesting things. I really recommend to read it. And it's yearly posted by Stack Overflow, one of the biggest platform. If you're hiring developers, it's a must read.
I would say that it's one of the annuals, isn't it? If you're involved in tech recruiting in any way and you're not reading this survey, you need to take a look at yourself. This is something you have to be aware of. The Stack Overflow, even though they've lost a little bit of their mojo, it feels a little bit since their acquisition and so on. But they are still one of the biggest communities of developers anywhere. And their ability to kind of get people to complete a survey is pretty unique. 70,000 developers worldwide have completed this. And they will tell you what tools they're using, what languages, what frameworks, whatever it is that they feel positive about or negative about. Really important if you want to educate inform your employer branding, for instance. And if you want to update your hiring manager as well, if they're thinking about this framework or that framework, you know what, check it out, see what the community thinks. The choices you make there is not only technical, it's also whether you've built, like you've chosen an attractive option for your to be able to hire for it. There's no point saying this is the best option when there's nobody wanting to do it, because it therefore is not the best option. And the final use case, by the way, for this survey, I think it's great nurture content as well. You know, all of those candidates that, you know, don't want the job now and say, yeah, let's keep in touch. This is the thing to send them. You know, I mean, how cool is that? If you were able to remind them to, hey, listen, Stack Overflow's just produced this. This is really cool. Check it out. No demand, no need, whatever. Everyone's going to feel slightly better for you. That relationship improves. That's nurture content. So everyone read this. Everyone use it. Very good. Okay. What else, Ala?
Sure. This one was a surprise reading for me. It is about the regional absenteeism, this like secretly affects your prospects. So I actually never realized that in a way, because when you work in a very international environment, so you should not, in a way, you know, it should not be a bias for you to hear someone's accent and to make any assumptions based on it. So I do know, and I read a lot about it, that if you can't understand what the person is saying to you because like you're not native speaker and it's hard to understand, so you just like you most likely you're going to reject this candidate because you haven't understood everything. So I think it's also a must read, because reducing this bias is crucial, because like I think a lot of us are working in this environment.
You know what, Ala, you mentioned something really interesting. It just occurred to me, but because you're obviously working in your second language and in an international environment, probably you'll be less subjected to this bias effect because of this nature, right? If you're using your second language, you're not going to necessarily associate so much judgment, I would say, to speakers of that language, because you know, everyone has an accent in your own mind. However, if you're a native speaker and you're speaking to someone who's also a native speaker, there is an accent hierarchy. In the UK, that's very clear. In the UK, it's very, very clear. I'll give you an example. People listening to this who are from the UK, can you name a Scouser that's a CEO of a FTSE 500 business? A Scouser being a person from Liverpool. Everyone loves the Liverpoolians. Great accent, great comedians, great whatever. But career track in the corporate world, you know what? I think that accent is a problem. You look at Estuary English. Called the Essex sort of style, right? Again, not a credible accent, totally irrational, by the way, not credible. How many of those are sea level? Again, very few. Where I'm from as well, I think struggling Northeast, Birmingham accent, by the way, anybody Brummie out there, shout out to all the Brummies. Guess what? It's a handicap and it's totally unfair. It's totally unfair, but it is hierarchical in your native language. We got to do something about it. I don't think anybody's talking about this. So I'll be very interested to know whether there's any way we can mitigate against this, because I think I'm broadly subconscious, but a lot of people are hearing this, like the recruiter at the first thing is having a telephone call, a video call or whatever, then they're making judgments on fit or suitability and stuff like this. So yeah, really tough. Yeah, Vim, very. I think the Belgian, very interesting with the dual language scenario as well. I can totally imagine, like, we have all of these associations. Very, very interesting. I think the US will probably have the same. I mean, again, I'm just speculating, but I would imagine, you know, you get a person from, let's say, the Deep South or so. I mean, are they getting to the top of the corporate ladder or political ladder or wherever it is? Probably not, you know. There's certain prestige accents out there. Totally unfair. Okay, let's think about how to deal with that. Give us one more, Ala.
Sure. By the way, it will be a great topic. And so I hear a lot of people say, hey, in my native language, I sound smarter. So I hear a lot. So, you know, when you try to use another language, you explain. Yeah.
I think in this case, it's a competitive advantage because you've got, like, obviously very, very high standard of English, but you don't speak with an English accent. You speak with your own accent. And basically, I don't think it's possible for anybody to be prejudicial against the person that speaks very high standard of second language, but it's not placeable, so to speak. So they won't understand how to hierarchy you in some sort of social strata. Anyway, we'll do a brain food lab on that in some course. I think it's definitely worth doing. Okay, one more.
The last one is a big surprise for me. It's why I'm never going to freelance again. It is very surprising because I've been doing freelance in 8 years. And like a lot of this time was remote. And there are so many benefits. I keep telling people that this is actually the best thing I ever did in my life. And the most challenging thing, that's the most sleepless, hardest. Sometimes money less, etc. And I was really, really interested to read through some of the challenges that the person actually went. I think it's useful when you already did some freelancing, but I wouldn't recommend it to read to someone who never did it, because when you start being a freelancer, you need, in a way, more inspiring, motivating part just to get through it. And then you learn taxes, and then you learn, like, you know, that there's gaps between gigs, or you never have a vacation for years. So, but yeah, it's a nice article if you've ever been in freelancing.
Yeah, that's right. So don't read this one, folks, if you've never freelanced before, because it might deter you from giving it a shot. But I think this guy, I think it was a guy, but I think he basically described what we all know if you've done a bit of freelancing, which is actually you spend like way more time than you think doing the sales and marketing side, which is probably not what you want to do. Like if you are a graphic designer, or if you are a copywriter, or if you're any kind of function, you want to be doing that work. You want to do production. But actually, production, if no one sees that, it's no good. You've got to spend time then interacting with people, doing sales and marketing, probably stuff you don't enjoy, but you've got to do a lot of that in order to get it in. And you need basically to get some sort of inbound mechanism for you. Otherwise, you'll basically have to switch your mindset to constantly do sales. So this is what this author is saying. I think it's well worth reading for people thinking about freelancing. I would say yes, it might deter people. But that may not be a bad thing, because a lot of people might naively go into freelancing, and that would be bad, because you can burn a lot of time. I did that. I mean, the first 18 months of my last time I had a salary job, 2009. So that was, I've been basically unemployed for like 11 years, right? So the first 18 months of that journey, I made no money. I literally made no money, like not a single fucking penny. Because I was like, yeah, what am I going to do? Just relying on a few things, and nothing came in. I was just burning cash. And then I had a revelation. I thought, you know what? You keep doing this, you are going to go bankrupt. That was it. It was like savings, just getting burnt all the way through. And I realized, you know what? I was thinking, right, do I like remortgage the house or something, you know, stupid stuff like this to keep going. Thank God I didn't do that. Because if I did, I would have given myself another 18 months of runway and really have got myself into trouble. But I realized straight away, probably later than this fellow, that actually the problem is the cost of acquisition of customers is too high. My conversion is zero. So I've got to rethink how this works. How do I sell what I'm selling, and figure that out? Anyway, managed to do it, but don't take my example. 18 months is a lot of money and not good time. So anyway, good read, worth reading for anybody who's thinking about this. Okay, let's get on with our topic. How to hire, a quick question for you before we bring our guests on, Ala. Do you think it is easier to hire for a big brand company? Yes, no, and explain why you think that's the case or not.
Yeah, so there are two people who disagree with it. So I'm on it because in a way it is, when you have a brand, you do have a high response rate, but it's not the only thing that is making it successful, right? So it is in a way easier for some things, but at the end, the companies with the big brands, so they have a bigger pool, they have a bigger choice, and you can end up with interviewing a lot of people and being very, very picky. So that's one thing. But I do think that when you have no brands, one advice that I will give straight away is act like you have one. I do receive very nice examples from people who regularly receive invitations, like have a chat, etc. And I'm happy to share further like the examples. But when you don't have a brand, but you have a creativity and passion, you sell it. You sell passion. So you do use tools, you create some presentations, video files. There are so many things that are so cheap and so useful. So some people even, I never heard about this company, but the email I received is amazing. Can you have a look at it? It's just like, you know, it's just hooked me up. Have you heard about this company? No. But they're doing a great job.
Okay, I think that's immediately a great thing to think about. So if you have a weak brand, or maybe it's just an early company, right? You could just be sitting next to the founder. You could be the first person in the business. So there's zero thing, nothing out there, maybe not even a website. I've done this before, working with a business that had no website. But you're saying you can create the assets, even if, you know, like literally take charge of it, create some cool looking assets, make that the thing, and then that's going to help people be a bit more convincing than if it was being apologetic for a weak brand, because that's a no sale. Like selling weakness just doesn't work.
Act like you have brands.
Okay, really, really good tip. Make notes, folks, because the people I'm bringing on are going to be some of the smartest people in our business. This is going to be a really interesting show. Let's bring everybody on. The all people we know and love. Let's bring on Dim Damans, seeing as he's already in the chat stream. We have a lucky joiner here. We've got Aaron Matthew to join at last minute. I managed to persuade Aaron to come on due to popular demand. And Ivan, he's coming on as well. I think this is Ivan Gulenko. I'm not sure. There's Vim. Vim, good to see you, man.
Hello, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Doing good. Vim, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, please?
I'm Vim. I'm just another recruiter. I've been recruiting for like 12 years now. I do some sourcing on the side. I have a newsletter for Belgian and French recruiters. We are like the brain food, but then for French and Dutch people. And other than that, I do all kinds of stuff on the side. I help out for Sourcing Summit and a bunch of other stuff.
Great stuff. Welcome to the show, Wim. And there's Aaron as well. Aaron, great to have you. I know it's like a last minute drop you into this, so I'm really pleased that you're able to make it. Aaron, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, I am Aaron Matthew. I have been a sourcer for the last 4 years, I think. And before that, I was a full cycle recruiter. I've worked in just about every industry: healthcare, marketing, education, aerospace, and now I am in fintech. Very excited to be in that space. I've spoken at SourceCon, Sourcing Summit, and if you've listened to any of my presentations, you probably know that, like Vim, I am a very avid Redditor, and we both like to source in that place. So definitely a fun place to source.
That's right. You two have actually been on a show where we talked about this, haven't we? We should probably revisit that, because I think Reddit is one of these things we should do on a yearly basis. Okay, we also have Ivan here. Ivan, good to see you, sir. Can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Sure. So I'm Ivan. I worked for 3 years as a software engineer, and then I really wanted to start something on my own, and I knew Hung and already the recruitment community, and thought this is a great place to become self-employed and ultimately have your own company. So I ran CoderFit for the last 6 years. And in the last 2 years, I ran Clang.so, which is a set of tools to make hiring easier. So basically, like, I'm now 200% into hiring developers. And this is all what they do, like, all day long, I guess.
Was I involved in your journey, man? I mean,
You made it sound like, hey, this is like a good field to be in. This is like, people here are competent. They know what they're doing. They're adding value to society and the GDP and to companies, right? And if you start a company in such a sector, right, you likely will be successful. So,
Were you a recruiter when I met you, or were you still a developer?
I was a developer, like, full time, but I did recruitment on the weekend and evening. So I started already doing things at night and building my network, definitely, when we met. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank God for that. I would have hated to have, like, accidentally diverted you into a recruiting career when you could have been some sort of genius developer building, like, amazing products for people, you know? But anyway, we're pleased to have you in our industry. You know, it's great.
I'm building amazing products now. So, I mean, you see it, like, we try to do, like, content generation tools, like this new news.clang.so. We are talking about nurture content, right?
All right.
This is what
enough
for
that. I will permit you to share the Clang link into the chat stream, and then we'll get into it. So, okay, you find the link and share it in, and let's talk about this topic. Let's think about hiring for a no-name brand. I think we've got a really interesting poll, by the way. I don't know whether everyone here has checked that out. Overwhelmingly, people say yes, it's easier. Ala mentioned it's easier in the top of funnel because maybe applicants coming in is there, but may the problem shift in a different place because you maybe there's more assessment, more candidate management, etc., etc. Let's talk about the problems first of all. Working for a big brand, for the panelists who have done this, and some of you have, what are the problems working for a big brand? If we accept that talent attraction is less of an issue, go ahead, Vim.
It takes forever to get anything approved, ever. It, like, everything is done by committee. Everything is designed by committee. If you have a really cool idea, you cannot just walk up to the owner and say, like, hey, can I have, like, X amount of money to do this really cool idea that I have, which is going to try and generate some really cool interest? Like, it takes 6 people, and they are sitting in a committee, and they're going to discuss it, and it will be the death of any good idea that you had.
Right. So absolutely, it's hard to get things done. Craig, by the way, in the chat stream just said preconceived biases about the business. I think that's absolutely true as well. Imagine, let's say you're hiring for Meta at the moment, for instance, last couple of years. Very, very difficult in the sense everyone has an opinion, preconception. Okay, how about you, Aaron? What's your thoughts on this? The challenges working for a big brand that we should state before we get into the meat of this conversation?
Sometimes the issue is that everybody wants to work for you. And that means a higher volume of applicants and sometimes it's not the best candidate experience. When you've got, you know, 500 applicants for one role, how can you really give everybody a wonderful red carpet candidate experience? That is definitely a challenge there. Not to say that it can't be done, but sometimes it's a good problem to have. But at the same time, I can just say as a sorcerer, it can be frustrating because you're like, you mean you don't need me to go out and hunt for people? I mean, I have to, you know, go through the people that already applied. So it just kind of depends what your role is.
Do you think that because of the knowledge that the brand is going to attract more people just by who they are, that recruiters for those companies basically spend more time doing advertising than they might do sourcing? So the job actually changes. So as a recruiter, you need to think about this. So if you really love sourcing, yes, then working for a mega brand, maybe you're going to do less of that because you might be managing ad response. Yes. Whereas if you don't mind the ad response, you hate sourcing, big company may be better for you. So it actually changes the sort of recruiting work you'd be doing, right? Yeah, very interesting.
Absolutely.
And therefore the skill set, like your skill set is going to be more probably requirement of empathy. You need to be more customer service orientated. You've got to have more of this. Oh, in rejecting a lot more people, I assume, right? That's going to be stuff you're going to do more of than less. Okay, cool. So we have how to get things done. We have more candidates. So the problem set shifts in a different way. Let's shift our thinking to when you're working for a no-brand business or a kind of a brand that people don't know. How does that change your mindset when you're looking for it? Is there any point in advertising, for instance? Do you think it's like pointless if you've got no name?
If somebody else wants to go first, but I think there's very much value in advertising, and you can just get your name out there and you can get people looking at you right away. I mean, there's always a good reason. If you say you have no brand, then there's absolutely no reason not to advertise. Then you should be advertising and getting your name out there and going like, hey, this is who we are. This is what we're doing.
Okay, really smart observation, Vim. So in other words, you change your mindset as to what an advert is. You're not saying this is my primary way of acquiring candidates. What you're saying is this is a brand building effort. I might as well put it out there because then all of these people that don't know us now see the logo, now see the business. It makes sense to try and use it as a marketing thing rather than candidate acquisition. Okay, very interesting. What are your thoughts on this, Ivan? I want to bring you into this because you're working agency side. So I'm sure you're representing brands of different types, right? So some people, that some brands are well-known, other brands not known at all. How do you moderate your behavior, or do you moderate your behavior when you're tackling the challenge of interacting with candidates?
To be honest, if you're a small company and you have no brand, it's actually a great opportunity to focus on what is important. I mean, think about it. Brand is like, okay, it's like an extra thing, right? You do this because you have the resources to actually do that. But if you're a small company, you like need to focus anyway. Like every founder knows this, right? So the same comes to recruitment. So why would you not use this as an advantage, right? So if a candidate says, hey, I never heard about your company, you can reply, we are quite busy here making money. Our business is highly profitable. We didn't let anyone go during COVID. This is our focus. Like, we focus on good software engineering. We have no time for this branding stuff. And some candidates, they will be attracted to that because they want like one thing. They want good teams, good processes, and a good day, right? They don't care if your name on Kununu or Glassdoor is good or bad. They want want a good life, during their workday. So why not focus on that? Why not focus on the one thing you do exceptionally well? So when I represent companies, I do exactly that. Like, we have one company where the CTO worked before in IBM with someone who's like super famous in IT, who wrote books, yeah? So they work together. So I can say, hey, you work with one of the best software architects in Switzerland. He happens to be like the lead CTO at this 20 people. Nobody knows this company, but you will end up working with this person. And this kills like all the, like this fear, yeah. Oh, I'm not sure about this company, la la la. But this one person, he's exceptional and he will be your boss. Many, many people already like this much, much more than it's like, we won this employer branding award. It's like, no, this is fake stuff. Like, I mean, if you have time for an employer branding award, this could be like a negative sign. Why do you take time to have an employer branding award if you could be like making money and like selling good software? So like everything has like, you know, two sides.
All right, I you can see why Ivan's a popular guest. Like he's gonna basically give you his opinion in no uncertain terms. But there's two things you've said here that are really interesting. Number one is actually you make it a strength. So in other words, employer branding might actually, the entire idea might be discredited amongst a certain community, right? Certain communities out there really hate marketing and they really hate anything associated with trying to make things appear better than they are. So you can go with a no name and say, you know what, we don't care about this. This is why you never heard about us. And then like really own that type of strategy. So think about this. Use your lack of name recognition as an advantage. You care about fundamentals and the real thing. And the second thing you mentioned, which I think is another very powerful technique, is to have a look at the existing team members and who they work with before in the past, because you can kind of use their personal brand and kind of that can kind of loan into the employer brand. So you can say, and I remember I did this with a company that had no website. This is Thought Machine back in the day, now a $1 billion business. The CEO of the company was Paul Taylor. He sold his ex company to Google. That was what we led with. Like there was no brand, no website, there wasn't any fucking website there. So we had to just go with this, but it worked because engineers recognized the dude's name and thought, oh, wow. And he was very, what's the word? Like Google proof. Like if you have a famous person or someone who's credible within a community, a search that the candidate will carry out will actually reveal a lot of credibility. So have a look at the people that are currently working in your company and see whether they've got any brands that can be useful in that case. Very, very interesting. Okay, what else can we do, guys? I mean, I'm talking like really early on, you're doing an email message or whatever, you're not getting open rates or whatever that you used to when you used to work for, you know, Amazon or something. Do you need to change something in terms of your messaging approach? Go ahead, Wim.
I want to pick up on something that Ewan said just a moment ago. He said like, yeah, forget about Glassdoor and everything. I would say do Google your company that you're working for and what name you already have out there. Like, do check it out. Do make sure that there's no like bad spots there or like really bad Google reviews or Facebook reviews where some ex-employee goes like, this was the worst company ever, because that will kill any hiring, because candidates are always going to check up on where are you going to, what can I find about this company? Because I'm going to sign away my life for X amount of years to work for this company. And if the only thing that's on there, if you don't have a brand and the only thing that's out there is negative information of this is a really bad company, it's going to end up badly because people aren't going to join a company that might be bad.
Okay, so that's a really important intervention, Wim. Thank you very much. I think that's critical. So let's say you have a zero. We know we've got a zero brand, but what you do have there is negative. That's the first thing you need to deal with because the candidate will Google you. Right. So you've got to put your mindset into the candidate perspective. They'll Google you. They come up with a bad review or something terrible that needs to be addressed. And the candidate might not do that, or they might not put any weighting to a negative review if it's a mega company. So if I'm looking at Google, I do a Google search on Google itself on you know, a Glassdoor. I'm going to say, yeah, of course, a few people are going to hate it. No big deal. I don't, you know, whatever. Whereas if you're a no-name business and that's the thing that appears, then suddenly it's a lot more weighted. So really great observation, Vin. Okay, this is great. Let's keep going with these tips. What else should we do? I'm talking about messaging. I was thinking, you know, do we need to change how we message?
Go ahead. I have another one. Like one of those things that I always hate with small companies is check your own socials. Like check your own Facebook. Like all these small companies have a Facebook, an Instagram, a LinkedIn. And then the last post is like 2 years ago, we had this really cool thing to say and there's nothing else. And it's just something I go like, yeah, okay, I get it. You're a small company, but either get rid of the socials, like don't have a Facebook page, or try and post something small once a month. Like be consistent in posting about it or don't have them. Like you don't need a Facebook page You can have that LinkedIn page just for LinkedIn, but it's horrible that you have companies out there that are like, oh yeah, we posted something 2 years ago and that was it.
Like, we've now got we've now got hundreds of recruiters doing an impromptu social media audit on their LinkedIn company pages and stuff. But you know what? That's such a great observation. Again, like, don't have moribund social accounts. Basically, remember you'll be searched by these candidates, so it's okay not to be there, right? It's okay not to have an account there. You can say, hey, all we do is on Discord or something like this. It's totally okay to just say this. But if you've got like outlying things that is simply looking as if no one cares, guess what? That's a problem. So that's a really good idea. Do a social media audit on your company profiles before you even talk to any candidates. Okay.
Can I add a little bit?
Yeah, of
because
course.
The reach out part, yes. Erin, you would like to add something to the wind? Yeah. Oh, I think we lost you for a second.
I was just going to, I'm having a little bit of a delay in the audio, but so I have also noticed that oftentimes if a company doesn't have a brand, sometimes all it takes is one mention of it for people to recognize it in the future. I actually worked in a unique situation where I worked for a very large company, but nobody had ever heard of it. We even called it that internally. We're the largest company that nobody's heard of. And that was when I was with Fresenius Medical Care, and they were a dialysis company. We were the largest dialysis company in the world, and nobody had ever heard of us. But I was guilty of that. But when I started working for them, I suddenly started seeing and noticing our clinics everywhere. They were always in my backyard. They were, you know, like everywhere that I lived within several square miles. But I didn't recognize that they were there until I started working for them. It was the same thing with Maxar Technologies. Nobody had heard of our company, yet we were making satellites for NASA, Sirius XM, and, you know, scaling up services for Amazon Web Services. And the minute that I heard of them, I would look at the Google satellite images, and right at the bottom, there's a little black bar that says imagery provided by Maxar Technologies. So that was kind of an interesting experience to work for a company that had such a big impact, but nobody had really ever heard of them. And now even my mom knows who they are. And she's texting me every other week saying like, oh, I saw some imagery, you know, from what's going on in Ukraine taken from your company. You know, they're, you know, on all of these, you know, satellite imagery, you know, updates. And, you know, it's very amazing how one, you know, exposure to a brand and you suddenly recognize it everywhere.
It's funny that you said that, because I have exactly the same thing with Maxar and the pictures that they show on the Chromecast. Every time they go by, I go like, Erin has worked for that company. And I know it because you worked for Maxar. For the rest, I had no idea who they were or what they did.
Well, you know what? There should be some way in which Maxar should pay you for this, Erin, because do you know what I mean? It's like it's possible for the recruiter to actually have this type of impact, because we would see these the logo, but not like connected to anybody. But because we know you, or you've been online someplace, you yourself have been visible, as I think a modern recruiter can certainly do very well. That really helps branding in a very subliminal way. And it helps connect. By the way, the anthropological term for this is called semiotic arousal. So if you kind of basically become aware of something, then you'll start seeing it everywhere and you can't stop seeing it. And, you know, this is how you develop, you know, millenarian cults and stuff like this, if that's something you want to try. No, I don't recommend. You know what I mean? This is basically how the brain dysfunctionally works, let's say. So what is the recommendation in this case then, Erin? So you're saying actually recruiter can have impact. So they should like push more marketing stuff out then? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I would put that right in my messaging. You know, like, have you never heard of us? Well, you might have heard of this adjacent brand that we work with. This is what we do for them. A lot of times you have to find something adjacent that they do recognize to make the connection. And that's always how I structure my messaging if they don't know about us. Or for example, when I worked for FTD, so Floris Trans World Delivery, a lot of people hadn't heard of that brand, even though it was a very old brand that, you know, delivered flowers, I oftentimes had to say, okay, well, have you heard of 1-800-Flowers? I say, okay, we do something similar to that, but they're our competitor.
Yep, yep. So adjacent brands, it could be a competitor, it could be someone further down or closer to the consumer in some way. Or maybe if it isn't any of those things, you can simply explain what the heck the thing does. So a brand is a shortcut to a function of the business and the purpose it forms. So if you're doing something that obviously no one's going to know because it's like stuck in the some back office supply chain somewhere, explain how that helps sort of at the consumer level, and then that people might be able to do that association. So a little bit of marketing, brand awareness, that type of stuff is anchoring, I think is another term that is relevant here. Okay, cool.
So Ali, may I contribute?
just interrupt, by the way. Just interrupt.
This is like the most important thing, I think, for those who really don't have a brand is how you approach it when you reach out to the candidates. Different things that you can do. One of them, of course, you're going to focus very, very much on the candidate research. You're probably not going to reach out to too many people, but you're going to personalize your reach out. Like why this person and why this job is going to make any change for this person's life. You can create the whole message about it. And answering these two questions could attract people. When you mention some people from the team, it's also like a beneficial, but the way how you're going to present your reach out could also vary. It could be video. And I saw a lot of nice startups. They're doing the video, they record the message, put the name of the person. And sometimes they even record it from the office where they're like, you know, if the small things are starting or from somewhere they, I don't know, if they protect the nature and do something that they make a purpose, mission driven reach out saying, and that's why we do that. So do you want to be part of it? Another strategy that is used is using CTO or CEO names, meaning that reach out is coming from them. And this is the strategy that I'm personally not a fan of, but it's worked very well. So recruiter using the CEO or the CTO.
Why are you not a fan of this, Ala? What's the problem with this?
Because it's not true. Like, I mean, in a way, it's not him or her, you know. So it's like, for me, it's like a crucial. It's not true. So that's the key. So you have to network when you have no brands, right? So you have to be very creative in a way. So the video message, also I saw amazing examples. Like my friend was like, oh, I have to show you. It's amazing. Reach out. 3 pages PDF created by with usage of PandaDoc. And it's the PDF of like, you know, pictures from the office, the person explaining why, and personalized inserted information about the person, like that's this recruiter is reaching out, like the role, some things from the experience. It's a template. It's 100% template. But the people were so excited, and yeah. So basically, you pick up the best practices that the brands are doing, and just in a way, adding a little bit of creativity to it, and you do it. Another thing that you can do, you can partner with some big names, or you know, to go to the conference together, and or invite them as speakers. Invite them. Go ahead.
No. I was about to say that's an amazing idea. Keep going, Ala. That's a really, really good idea. So you're basically piggybacking off a bigger brand. Tell us about how you do this.
There are different ways how I saw how people are doing that. So if you would like to attract developers, invite, for example, Joe Romero. He's the founder of Doom. He's the father of gaming. You invite him, you will have a big crowd of people. These are the people who share the same interest. I saw on one of the also, like, you know, promotions everywhere in the city where there is universities, there is advertisements. And it's a very funny advertisement. Like, you know, people really are like, what is that? So they started paying attention. But it was strategically placed close to the universities because people were targeting, like, you know, freshers from the tech. And inviting speakers for your, like, organized meetups. Even if you have a company of 3-5 people, you can still do that. And I saw one company just put a huge vendor machine in the city center. It was in Amsterdam. And then, like, people didn't know what is happening, and they were giving up some free drinks and etc. They were building the name around it, so, or appearing in the news. So, yeah, there are so many things you can do.
All right, I hope everyone's writing it, this stuff down, because it's genius. I want to lean on to the last comment, because I thought that was a really good way of basically piggybacking off a industry firm's person that you want to hire from. And there was a good friend of mine. Actually, he's not that good a friend. I haven't spoken to him for ages. He is a friend. Ilya, you're a friend. He basically, the technique he used was he surveyed the candidate community and asked them who they would like to see on a podcast. So that was their initial touch. He knew his brand wasn't big enough. His company brand wasn't big enough to get any excitement. But he then emailed, not a recruiting call, but he messaged people to say, hey, listen, we're going to do a webinar series. We're going to highlight industry people who are doing this, this, and this. Who's your favorite? We're going to invite the favorite the people who vote. And then he took the nominations of the people. All of these people came in, had a super, super high response rate because everyone's saying, yeah, get this guy, get this person. And you know what he did? That was so smart. He found the person who was at the top level, who's the top voted person. And the message to that person was to say, hey, you know what? I work in this city, in Helsinki, and the Helsinki community really loves you. You won the result of this poll. Would you be able to come and give a talk? And at this pre-COVID, so he flew him over from US to Helsinki to give this talk, covered all the expenses, etc. But you can imagine you can do this on a webinar. But the pitch to the guy was to say, you have been nominated by the community as the most popular person they want to hear from. Would you like to come and do it? So he basically used both sides. He didn't do a huge amount of effort himself, just organized those two things, got all of those developers in a room. Of course, he hired, made the hire, right? He built his thing. You can repeat this on webinar, very easy. Okay, listen, folks, we're going to take a quick break here because we always do this in the middle of every show. Brain Food Live is a conversational space. We on the screen do a lot of talking, but we only have an hour to do it. What I don't want us to do is ever to be a bottleneck for the end of this show. So if you're interested in this topic, you want to be continuing this conversation when we go off air. The way we do that is to make sure you're connected with everyone else who is here. So take a moment. Take your LinkedIn profile and share it in the chat stream or comment thread or whatever it is you're watching it, and then connect with everyone else who shared that. The idea behind this is that, I don't know how many hundreds of people are watching this, maybe 200 people overall, 300 perhaps. All of those people are interested in the topic, how to hire when you don't have a brand. Guess what? Go and speak to those people after the show. You know, you've all got these issues. Go and have a conversation off air. Make sure you're connecting with them all. These are all individuals with similar challenges and similar passions to get this right. No reason why you should continue that conversation as you go. Okay, this is excellent stuff, folks. What else do we need to think about? You've got the person. Is the brand problem, does it go away once the person is in process? So a lot of this is top of the funnel. Like, you want to get them, you know, taking your call, getting a response. All right, great. You've got them in an interview. They're in process. Have we solved the brand problem then, or what?
I personally think it's an ongoing thing. Like, if you start with a company with no brand, which I think every company has something out there, every company has something which represents a brand, even if you don't want it, it's going to get there anyway. But if you have a company with no brand, it's a canvas. It's a blank canvas. You can start building a brand. But from there on, you just have to keep going and just keep it live and just keep the same information out there, even if you're not hiring, because in a few months' time, you might be hiring. And then if you suddenly have like nothing to go on again, then yeah, it's going to fall flat.
Is there a way to convert the interview process into something that's valuable for branding? Like, can you get the person, I don't know, let's say a candidate is in process, you want to maintain the person's privacy, of course, but is there a way in which we could talk about what we're doing as we're doing it in a way? I mean, any thoughts on this?
I used to ask candidates during the interview, like, hey, what did you find about us? Like, what have you seen? Have you seen what we're doing? Has that at any way resonated? Or I would even ask candidates, like when I was recruiting for junior security people, I was going like, hey, super cool. Where do you spend your free time? Like, what platforms are you guys on? Because I don't know. I was looking for those people. And that's how I ended up like, oh, these people are also on Reddit. And then I started recruiting on Reddit. So you can ask your candidates for feedback, but you can also ask your candidates like, hey, where are you guys located? Where do you spend your free time?
Sorry, I was momentarily distracted by a compliment, actually, which I never get right. So, you know, whenever they appear, it's like, oh, very exciting. We're coming to the end of the show. By the way, folks, if anyone's got any questions for our panelists, make sure you ask the question and bottom the ask a question function. Let us know what your current challenges are. What is your question? Please ask it below on the crowdcast there and we'll get to it. If you're on LinkedIn or anywhere else, just comment the question. I'll see if I can get to that as well. Let's have a think about the sort of the tips we want to give to people who are right now struggling in this scenario. The kind of thinking, right, I'm working for this company. Nobody knows us. I'm just not getting any engagement, not getting any interest. I'm basically not hiring candidates. What's the one thing that they should be aware of, or one takeaway you can offer them to say, you know what, if you do this, it's going to make it better? Ivan, do you want to start us off with this one?
Don't get distracted. Like, really think about what is the one, two, or three things that make your company super duper unique. I had just a company, they offered a job after one interview round. The candidate, more junior one, this person was out of their mind from happiness, right? They're like, oh my God, this, like, they value me so much. It was like 2.2 hour like meeting, and they're like, here is the work contract. Do you think like the big companies have a chance now, like, to compete against that? If that person is like uber happy? No, right? So, like, just find one, two, three ways to improve your situation that really matters. Like, what matters? Quick interview process, good engineering team, good career, you are a profitable company that actually makes money, like stuff like that. And communicate that relentlessly, and then you'll get the right candidates.
Yeah, really good. I mean, to be honest with you, it also is a way to kind of get rid of candidates that are overly brand focused, right? There are people out there that would only want to work for, you know, they've got and this is not a bad thing, they just have a plan, that's their direction. But if they're going to say no early purely based on no name recognition, you can say, totally cool. Then move on and not waste your time having to work, you know, with those types of folks. Okay, how about you, Vim? Any ideas? One thing you want to offer?
One thing I want to tell people, like, I've done a lot of IT recruitments. I've done a lot of things. We had a Stack Overflow questionnaire from that was at the start. In one of the old Stack Overflow questionnaires, you can see that Reddit is one of the biggest used social media platform for ITers. Mm-hmm. You can run recruitment ads on Reddit for less than €5 a day. Like, for less than €5, you can run ads on Reddit, which a lot of ITers are going to see. And it's like those small things, like for €5, you can run a whole marketing budget. For a few thousand euros, you can have a whole year of
why is it so cheap? Ads. Like, that's cheaper than Brainfood Jobs, man, which, you know, is I'm cheap. So how is Reddit cheaper than me? I can't believe this.
It is just cheap. I mean, I was always amazed that LinkedIn and Facebook and everything else was like super expensive. And then when I looked into Reddit ads, I was like, well, this is way too cheap for what it is.
Okay, quick question. Is it in an in-group or an in-subreddit advert, or is it an advert that goes across the entire thing? Hey, who do we have here?
This is Logan.
Oh, hey, no. Logan, it's the Brain Food Live debut for Logan. How are you doing, kiddo? Yep. Very well behaved.
Yeah, I had to hand them back to me.
No worries. All good. Thanks for bringing and introducing the young lad to our audience. Okay, so by the way, we should obviously do a Reddit recruiting show. Folks, what do you think of that? Let me know whether that's worth doing. We'll bring a few of these guys on that know what they're doing. Do we want to do a Reddit-only type of Brain Food Live? Give us one thing, Erin. One thing you suggest you do if you have kind of no brand, weak brand, or whatnot.
I think that you have to find out exactly what the candidate is looking for in their next role, because whether or not you have a brand, you can possibly offer that to them. For example, a lot of developers really hate working in maintenance environments. And at a lot of companies, they have established processes, and a lot of what they'll be doing is maintenance work and not building out new and exciting things. So whether you have a brand or not, if you can find what they're looking for and it's a match for what you need within your company, then that's, you know, that's one way to win with them for sure. And just a quick comment about something I put in the chat. So Vim was talking about running ads on Reddit. Feel free to comb through the Reddit sourcing toolbox. I've indexed communities for various job families. If you want to target ads, that's a good resource to use. Our marketing department uses it all the time.
That's amazing. Is it the same Google Doc that you've always had, the same sheet, Erin? Yeah.
Because I continue to maintain that.
Yeah, yeah, that's amazing that you do that. Because I think we've already featured it on Brain Food, but maybe it's another way, a good reason now to reboost it. Because if it is still maintained, that would be amazing. So yeah, let's get into that. Mm-hmm. By the way, we've got an overwhelming response on people saying let's do a Reddit show, so we have to do that this year, no question about it. Okay, Ala, let's leave it to you. Give us one thing that you'd advise a recruiter that's sitting there, you know, struggling away. What would you advise them to do if they're working in a brand that no one really knows?
Yeah, one thing I will tell them: be fast. This is going to be your best advantage in a big company. So you'll have to go through the process, scorecards, things like, you know, decisions, roundtables, etc. So if you're in a small company that has no brand yet, or like average, like 100 people company, and you can influence on the interview process and make it fast. I saw so many interesting situations when the candidates were like, oh, they want me. They really want me so fast. So I haven't used to it. So should I have more interviews or something? So it is a huge advantage in nowadays to be fast, make decision fast, make your hiring managers decide fast, and you will win this market against the big brands that are not so fast, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I think it's very, very much aligned with, particularly with Ivan is saying, there's certain advantages. Basically, it's not just a inherent disadvantage to have a no-name brand. It basically is a trade-off. Like your advertising is going to be weaker overall because you don't have that pull. Maybe the conversion is going to be more difficult or whatnot. Probably comp is going to be not as strong, but you're going to be faster. You're going to be able to do things. You can sell a different story. And there's other ways in which you could build brand value that doesn't necessarily rely on this big thing at the top. And by the way, and again, this is no disrespect to marketing or recruitment marketing people or EB folks, but in those huge brands, you are often very constrained as a recruiter, right? Because you can't say certain things. It's like, oh, you know, this needs to be validated, or you can't blog about that, or you can't do this. And it's like, how frustrating is that? Because if the ownership of speaking on behalf of the company is within another function, actually you're kind of doing stuff with a kind of one arm behind your back anyway. So we have to get rid of this concept that having a no-name brand is potentially a weakness. It could be a strength. Okay, final thing, a couple of questions. I think Tanya has mentioned a question on the chat. Let's deal with this one. Basically, what recruitment marketing platforms do we use? I want to just have you answer this question like as you hear it. What are your thoughts on this? Anybody? We've killed the panel with the stunning question. It's like she shocked them.
I just got pulled into a double stream of you because somebody tagged me on Facebook and I was trying to put the Stack Overflow questionnaire. So can you ask the question?
Oh yeah, I think it was Tanya. She mentioned something about what was the recruitment marketing platforms you use? So in other words, if you want to try and get your name out there, like how are you doing that?
When I ran recruitment ads, we actually tried both Facebook, LinkedIn, and Reddit because we didn't know which platform was the best. And we came to the conclusion that Facebook and LinkedIn is super expensive, so we never used it. We're never going to use it again because they charge way too much for what they were worth. And then Facebook and Reddit both had good conversions, but Reddit had a lot more people who saw the ads. But I think you don't really need to pin yourself down on existing platforms. Like Ala just said, go to conferences, go to Discords, go to wherever your people, like wherever your candidates are organically, and spend time there and spend your money there instead of ads. Like do giveaways, do other cool stuff.
On that note, by the way, I think it was Ala, you mentioned this, but I didn't underline it, but I should have done. It's like, go to those places where the events are happening, because that's a great way to build brand with a lot of different folks. I mean, look at even Brain Food Live here as an example. It's not a mega event. We do this every week. So, you know, it's a meetup in effect. but there's 100 plus people in Crowdcast here, probably a couple hundred more in different places. If you're commenting on here or you're, you know, interacting in some way, that's kind of brand building a little bit, right? You kind of know what you're talking about here, especially if you manage to get yourself on screen. So there's another thing recruiters might be able to do is be more prominent yourself in industry, and that can help elevate your brand in a different way. So don't sit back and think, oh, someone else deals a brand. You're the person interacting with the audience and trying to recruit people and grow the company. Maybe you should take some responsibility for this. You got the opportunity. Okay, final question here. We'll leave to Dinara. Dinara is saying, okay, how to answer, how to hire senior candidates to join a startup company and how to assure them that the company won't shut down in a few months. So I think this is actually a genuine case. You're a startup business. There's a reticence there to say, you know, how do you know you're still around? How do you create that sense of security for someone who may be advanced in their career? You know, there could be parents that have responsibilities, etc. Thoughts on this?
It's a difficult question because
I am not sure. I've never worked in the startup area.
It's a difficult question because it depends on a company. Like if a company is like sound in why it was made and they know why it exists and they know like what the technology that they're making will be useful for the next X amount of years. Like if you're doing something like, oh, we're going into solar energy right now, you're pretty sure you're going to be there for a few more years, right? So it really depends on the one hand on the company, and on the other hand, joining a startup is always a risk. You know, you're never right. going to be able to like be honest to people and say like, look, yeah, this is a risk. You know, it could be that tomorrow our funding gets pulled and then we are all out of a job. That's always risk with a startup.
I think that's absolutely right. Dinara, the answer to that is you've got to assess the risk appetite for the person. If they're concerned about, oh, the startup stability, guess what? It's a startup. And there will be a kind of inherent risk with that. At the same time, we've also seen that there's no kind of security with a more mature company either. So maybe you can also present it that way. Okay, that's great. I think we've already lost Aaron. Aaron and Logan have got better things to do, of course. So great to see those guys. Let's say goodbye to our guests. It's been great having you. Vim, great to see you, sir. Great to have you on the show. We'll obviously get you back. I think the Reddit thing is going to happen, so no question you get an invite for that. You have a good weekend, man.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you for having me.
No worries, man. And Ivan, great to see you again, sir. As always, your contributions are amazing. There's no doubt you're one of the most popular guests on the show. We'll have to make sure it's not like several months again before we get you back. So we'll make sure you're back on Brain Food Live in due course, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Take it easy. Cool. Well, that's it, everybody. Great to see everybody. Thank you so much for joining. We're on time. We're not bleeding it into 80 minutes or whatever it is, because you know what? That's a lot of work. But we're going to finish it at 60. Thanks for watching the show. We're back next Thursday. No, we're not. We're back Friday. We are back on Friday. What the hell are we talking about? I actually can't remember, but I'm sure it's going to be another great show. It is actually. Oh, Christ. I forget what the show is. Do you remember? What's next week, Allah?
I'm just taking right now.
check for me what's next week. I'm sure it's amazing. So amazing. I can't remember the name, the title of our conversational topic.
I'm trying to find it because, yeah, you signed the whole agenda. Like,
is it not happening? Let me just check on the other. I can do it on Crowdcast, actually. Let's have a look. Oh, this is another AB one. I love it. This is going to be even better. Employer branding when you're making layoffs.
Oh, yeah.
If you're making layoffs, how do you talk about a company? Let's say one department you're making layoffs, you're still growing in another department. How do you handle that situation? And in fact, how do you deal with the conversation internally? How do you then communicate externally? You always have to take care of that kind of, as a recruiter, that may actually be one of your final responsibilities. So we are talking about this situation. If you might be in this at some point, folks. So I'd recommend you sign up for this and register for the show. If you enjoyed this, by the way, follow the channel. That's always the best way to be notified. And yeah, I guess I'll see you next week. So thanks for watching, everybody.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Cool. Well, that was it. That was interesting, wasn't it? I enjoyed that show, yeah. Allah. You know
yeah,
what?
I enjoyed it too.
I should tell you, you should interrupt when you need to interrupt. That's the only feedback I've got for you. Because I think you're polite and you shouldn't be. Just like bust in with it.
It's gonna you be have okay. You for that. So you're like a good and bad policeman. So I guess, if you're interrupting, you don't give people actually to tell what they want to tell. So I should be the opposite, right?
The good cop, bad cop. I'm happy to play bad cop to your good cop, Ala. Listen, thanks so much for joining. I don't know when we're next connecting. Are you still doing SOSU stuff? There's a SOSU event recently, wasn't there? Or
it was the SOSU event, yes. But it's going to be HRTX and SOSU happening in September as well. So embrace yourself. Have some in Amsterdam. Are you coming? Are you? It's in person. It's going to be the first time I'm going to see probably Honey in 2 years.
Do you know what? I would go if I knew more about it. But isn't the September thing and isn't HR Tech in Vegas happening at the same time? Is that the date of this?
No, I hope not. The date for SOSU is 28th and 29th September.
Okay. I need to figure out. I've messaged Phil about something anyway, so I'll have a chat with him and see what's what. Anyway, listen.
Yeah, we're waiting for you in Amsterdam. There's going to be a boat tour for you. Everything. I will
jump on the back of the boat and hide under the tarpaulin or something, and you know, see if I can join the crew. But all right, listen. You have a good weekend, Ala. Thanks for doing everything you're doing, and we'll chat soon. Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Cool. Wasn't that great, everybody? Yeah, great show. Enjoyed it. Brain Food Live, folks.